Thank you so much. We are excited to be here. Thank you again for inviting us. And it's exciting to come and to meet new people. And the way that you folks have taken us in, it's so warm. And we're going to take this back to the folks in Arlington and let them know about our brothers and sisters here and what they're doing. Now, we want to make sure that everyone understands what the procedure is. After this, we're going to go to Ernie's favorite part of the service, which is
fellowship.
Dinner. Luncheon. Dinner. And that'll be immediately following. And if you are a visitor here, you are more than welcome, as I understand. We'd love to have you come and to partake in that fellowship luncheon with us. And then immediately after, before you all take your afternoon nap, we're going to come back here. And how long are we going to be?
29 minutes.
Now, what if I really twisted his arm? And Ernie, are you in for bargaining?
Yeah, these people are nice.
So I think we can get him down to 28 minutes. 28 minutes, I tell you, you can set your clock by it. He will do it. But folks, the time will go so fast because he's going to introduce to you another wonderful name of God and what it is like. And we want you to be sure and to catch that. And the reason that we set the time so concretely, because a lot of people say, oh, I don't want to go after this, I'm full, I'm sleepy, those guys won't know when to quit. And we guarantee you that it will be over. But the thing that we'll really guarantee you is you're going to get a glimpse into the character of your God that will give you something that will take you right on through. And so be sure and stay for that and enjoy that opportunity. Let me go over this one more time. Most of you have heard this. Some of you are new here for this service. So we want to make sure that everyone has access to this. And now let's see. You all got how much it costs, right? What's the bill? Free! It's totally that way. And our church insists on that. We insist on that because we feel that if we are out trying to drum up money to try to pay for us going, we're not into that at all. We have full-time jobs. Our wife has full-time jobs. And the Lord has said, go, and we go. And we didn't come to try to get anything from you. We're so amazed at what you folks are doing, desiring to build this and so on. And so we haven't come to try to get anything. We'd love to have your name so we can put it on the prayer list for your prayer requests, but that is it. So we're going to put into the hands of one per family, please, these outlines. And please remember what we're trying to do with this. It's an outline. It's not all fleshed out. We introduce you to that name of God, give you a story or two of where that is, and our purpose is that hopefully somehow there will be some who will say, let's get together and have a study group, whether that's in prayer meeting, whether that's in your homes. Invite people in. People would love to hear about the character of God. There's just something about us that so often we want to invite people in and tell them the most objectionable characters, the difference between one and another. That's not what we are about. We are about proclaiming what a marvelous God that we serve. And so use this as a platform for a study group, praying and open the door and watch how the Father will reveal His love to you. That's what He's doing. And that's why we're putting that in your hands. Also, where you can use these CDs, again, one per family, please. And folks, we have found these surfacing in Africa. We've had several there. We've heard these in Australia. We didn't know how they got there. And we don't care. We want to get them out so people can understand what the character of God is like. 15 sermons in here, plus an introduction. And you could use this as a basis for your prayer meeting, but you don't have to listen to us drone on. You got just as many things to say about it and the exciting things what God is doing. So this can be a resource service for you. After you listen to them, don't let them get dust. Give them to somebody else. Let them see what he's like. And then in the notebook are two of these laminated cards. And we want everyone here to have one for their Bible, saying, put it in there, mark their place. And when you see one of those names show up, you can look over here and find out what it is and how it's pronounced and some scriptures about it, so that story will come alive. Again, one for every person here. And finally, I authored a book, and I'm so sorry that I had to go to Hawaii to do this. I feel that I'm tormented because I went. Those guys were tortured because they had a bad place to go. I'm tortured because Ernie won't let me live it down. No, he's thrilled about it. Anyway, one per family, please. Yes, ma'am. Yes. It's one. Oh. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I put it on Amazon, and I think I'm not after any kind of royalties. I don't care about that. If I get those, we put them back in the ministry anyway. And if you do like it, you can go on Amazon and write a review if that's what you want to do, because people will look at that and perhaps will buy that. Again, we're not out trying to hawk anything. We're giving this away, and so we want to make sure that people have access to that. I don't want to take any more time to hold back and give Ernie plenty of time to share with you a beautiful story. I had no idea about this name of God, and there are things about it that he has shared with me that are just wonderful about your father. You'll get an insight into God of one of the dearest relationships that you can have. And Ernie comes from an environment where he had an amazing father. I wished I would have known him. Didn't have the opportunity to meet him. You'll meet him this morning and what Ernie has to say. And it was from that he had that background. It said, wow, there are so many things, similarities between what I see with my father and what I see with my heavenly father. He was a very fortunate man to have that experience. And Ernie and I, both of us have our own work, a career. He's a national sales trainer. My wife and I are family counselors. His wife works for American Airlines Pilot Association. So we're not out to try to do anything but to proclaim the name of God. And when you see this morning, you'll see why Ernie's heart burns within him, because he wants to share the wonderful news about Abba. Ernie, God bless you.
If God had a refrigerator, your picture would be on it. If God carried a wallet, your photograph would be in it. He gives you a beautiful sunrise every morning. Gives you a gorgeous sunset every evening. And in the springtime, He gives you beautiful flowers for you to enjoy. And every time you talk, God listens. Now, God could live anywhere in the universe that He wanted to, but He's chosen to live in your heart. Don't you get the picture that God is crazy about you? God is crazy about you. And that is our message of our ministry. Now, in the English language, there's many words that we kind of grow to like. Obviously, love is a word we love to hear and we love to give. I've kind of found myself over the past few years finding a word that I kind of enjoy, and that's grandma. That's what I call my wife, Grandma. Kids call her Grandma. The grandchildren call her Grandma. The great-grandchild calls her Grandma. And I found myself calling her Grandma. So I kind of got to like that word. But let me tell you a word that I treasure. And that's the word, Daddy. I can never in my life remember ever calling my daddy father. Well, that seems kind of stilted to me. It was always daddy. I had a great daddy. He passed away about 15 years ago, and I miss him. I would love to share with him about our tremendous weekend that we've had with you folks, because he was always interested in what I did. So, if you don't mind, would it be all right if I shared a story about myself and my daddy? Would that be okay? Well, I appreciate that. 1957, I was 13 years old. And you might remember, how many of y'all remember Look Magazine? Yeah, that used to be out. And there was an article in the Look Magazine written by author S. Maxwell entitled, Why I Am a Seventh-day Adventist. Now, my daddy liked door-to-door things. And so one day in the summer, he came to me and he said, Now, what I want you to do tomorrow, before you go play basketball and baseball, I want you to hand out these pamphlets on why I am a Seventh-day Adventist. He had them reprinted. And he says, I want you to knock on the door, and when they come to the door, just say, I have something here I'd like to leave for you to read. And I said, okay, that'll be fine. So I get up the next morning, and he brings them out. Now, I might be wrong, but I swear to you, I think there were a million of them. It was the biggest pile of papers I had ever seen in my life. So I start out and I go to a few houses and I knock on the door and I said, here, I have something for you to read. And I begin to look at those and they weren't going down very fast. And I thought, man, I'm going to be stuck doing this all day. So I said, well, I'll shortcut it a little bit. Instead of knocking on the door, I'll just go up and put them on the door. So I did that for about a couple of blocks, but man, that wasn't moving any faster. So I go down by Sears and Roebuck. Back then it was Sears and Roebuck. And I come across a drainage ditch. So I look at the drainage ditch. I look at these papers. Back to the drainage ditch. And it just seemed like the thing to do. So I threw them in the drainage ditch. I went and played basketball. And later on that afternoon, I came back home. And, of course, I heard the question I didn't want to hear. Hey, how did that giving out those papers go? Now, I didn't lie to my daddy. So I want you to listen very carefully to what I said. He said, how did that go today? And I just smiled at him sweetly and said, Daddy, I got rid of all of them. Well, my daddy loved to take walks. And about 2 days later, I always enjoyed walking with him. We would talk about all kinds of stuff. Hey, let's go for a walk. Okay, I'm ready. So we start. Now, we always had a certain route. But today, he wanted to change the route. Oh, let's do something different. So we start walking, and we're doing pretty good. And all of a sudden, I look up, and there's Sears and Roebuck. And I'm thinking, no, can't be. We walk along, and there all of a sudden is that drainage ditch. And as we approach it, my daddy says, you know, I'm getting a little tired. Why don't we just stop and rest here? And I say, oh, Daddy, no, man, we're out for exercise. Let's get moving. And, of course, you know what happened. He looked down. And there they all were. And he looked at me. And this is why I love my daddy. He didn't punish me at all. He really didn't say anything at all. Because he saw the hurt in my eyes that saw the hurt in his eyes. And that was all the punishment he knew that I needed. I'd let him down. That's my daddy. Now, in the Bible, today's name is Abba, A-B-B-A. It's found only three times in the Bible. Two of them is by Paul. And Paul uses the word Abba, which means literally daddy. Now, Rob said last night, one of the things about the language of the Bible is that it's all in word pictures. And here's the word picture for Abba. I want you to picture this. The word picture for Abba would be a daddy who's in the floor with his children, and they're unwrapping gifts, and they're rolling, and they're wrestling, and they're laughing, and they're touching, and they're hugging, and they're enjoying each other. That's the word picture for Abba, daddy. Have you ever thought about your God like that? Well, I hope you do this morning. So we see Paul using it, and it had to do with adoption. Back there, it took 3 days to get adopted. And so Paul says, well, when a child who really had no future, nothing going for him, were adopted by somebody that had everything going for him in a family, it meant a change of life, that the children would cry out to their new parent, Daddy! Daddy! Just out of glee and excitement, Daddy! The third time this word is used, I think you're going to be surprised. And we're going to come to that in about 20 minutes. How many of you have heard the parable of the good daddy? Would you raise your hand? Well, I see three or four of you. Well, you probably know it as the prodigal son. Now, why in the world is that story named the prodigal son? He's not the hero. The daddy's the hero. Now remember the principle that Rob shared with us. It's very important. The story is always about God. It's not about a person. I remember as a small boy growing up, you know, the old flannel graph and everything about Gideon. And Gideon, man of faith. Boy, he was just right there. Then as I got older and started reading the story, what faith? God comes along and says, I'm do this, and Gideon says, hey, I got to have a sign. And so God gives the sign, and he wakes up the next morning and says, oh man, that could have been a coincidence. Let's reverse it and let the other. What kind of faith is that? You see, it's not Gideon that looks good. It's the patience of God that looks good. So the story is always about God. And so this story is the story of the good daddy. Now you all know the story. Man had two sons. The elder one seemed like a hard worker, doing everything. The younger one, a whiner. And the story begins that he comes to his daddy and he says, look, old man, this ain't for me. Only I know what's good for me. Have y'all ever heard that? Only I understand what I need. Now, please get this picture. Well, the story picks up and he comes to his daddy and says, look, old man, it's almost like he was saying, I wish you were dead. Because the only way he could get his inheritance was when he died. So he's almost saying, old man, I wish you were dead. But you're not. So look, only I know what's good, and I want to go do my own thing. I want to be me. I want to find me, but I want to do it on your money. So give me my share of the inheritance, and let me go do what I have to do. Now, here's what I want you to get the picture on. This was not the first time that the son had come to his daddy and made this request. Because no daddy, the first time, would grant that request. This had been going on for a long time. He had been begging. He had been sulking. He had been probably getting mom kind of on the side. And he becomes such a way that finally when he came in our story, the daddy looked at him and understood a sad principle. I have no other choice but to let him go. And I hope he comes back. And so we have the son. Gets his inheritance. Starts out the door. And he goes down the trail to what he thinks is going to be the most wonderful life. I wonder what went through the son's mind as he left. You know, I wonder if he's going down the trail, did he stop and turn around and wave to his daddy? I even wonder if he gave him the back of his hand. I don't think he did either. I think he was about as selfish as a person can be. And so off he went. Now, one thing in life, when you got money, you got lots of friends. Got lots of good times. Man, you are a hit. See? But the story progresses, and we find him now. No money, no friends, no women, no song, no wine, nothing. And we find him, get this picture, a Jewish boy in a pig pen fighting the pigs for slop to exist. Can you get any lower than that? Can you get any lower than that? Now Luke, when he tells this fabulous story, says that the boy came to his senses. Now my question this morning is, how in the world did he come to his senses? Let me tell you, there's two powers working on that boy in that pig pen. There's two powers in this world working on you. And in that pig pen, there was one power that said to that Jewish boy in the pig pen, look where you're at. Look what's happened to you. And there was another power all in that pig pen that simply said two words. Go home. You can't go home. You've gone too far. Look at you. You're an embarrassment to your family. You're an embarrassment to your church. What would your family say? What's your church going to say when you come home? You can't do that. Look at you. You're filthy. Oh, but that's that other voice. Go home. And then the cruelest of all voices says, you can't go home because no body cares about you. But praise God for that other voice, because it's there and it says, go home! And that's how the boy came to his senses. He finally listened to the go home voice and he started thinking, hey, I had it better back there. And he says, he gets up and he starts writing his speech. He had no idea how much his daddy loved him. Not a concept, because he said, I'm going to go home to my father and I'm going to say, I'm unworthy. I've got to start at the bottom and just take me as a hired servant. And if I do really good, maybe I can work my way back into the family. And he starts writing that word. That's the son. What about the daddy? What's going through his mind when the son left? No, he didn't get that wave. He didn't get that turnaround and say, and so why wonder what went through the daddy's mind as he stood there and he watched his son going down a path to a life that he knew what it would lead to. Watch through that daddy's mind. Well, I know. I know exactly what went through his mind. Because I only have to go to Daniel that says, where God said to an angel, was coming back and forth, and he says, see Daniel, I want you to go down there to Daniel, and I want you to tell Daniel that he is my precious treasure. And as that daddy watched his son, he saw his precious treasure going down that road. How did that daddy feel? I only have to go to Isaiah. Isaiah says, God said about His wandering children, children of Israel, He asked a very important question. Can a woman forget her suckling child? The answer is yes, sad to say. We read about it in the papers. Babies dumped in garbage, left in closets. All of this. Can a woman forget her suckling child? Yes. But God says, I will never forget you. And then hold on to this. He says, I have inscribed your name on my hands. You get that picture? Your name on God's hands. And so as that son went down there, that daddy said, as all daddies say, oh, I'll never forget you. My precious treasure. Your name always will be on my hands and my lips. How did that daddy feel? Only have to go to Jeremiah 13th chapter where God looked over His children and He says, my eyes fill with tears. I weep bitterly and the tears run down my cheek. And that's what the daddy did as his son left. Tears, heartbroken. How did that daddy feel? Only have to go to one of the most beautiful and painful chapters at the same time, Hosea, the 11th chapter, where God says to the children of Israel, they're about to be destroyed. They're about to be separated and wandered throughout the country. And He says, it was I that when you were a baby, I held you in my arms. It was I who fed you. It was I who took you by the hand and taught you to walk. It was I who have loved you with an everlasting love. And then the most painful words God can ever ask, how can I give you up? How can I let you go? But I must. Because you're joined with your own idol. And so we see that daddy at that door. Tears. Heartbroken. How can I let you go? But I must. Now we find the daddy doing what all good daddies do. They're always looking. And every morning, Daddy would come out on the porch and he would stare at that long road, hoping, praying, looking. And one day, as he stands there, looks way off in the future, down that road, and he sees somebody. Could it be? I think it might be. It is. It's my son. And then Luke says, the daddy ran to meet his son. Why is that important? Well, you have to understand the culture. Back then, you know, everything was very dignified. It's not dignified in Texas. I don't know how it is in South Carolina. But, you know, in Texas, we're not dignified. So back then, oh, it was very dignified. So here's what a father, head of the household, would do. He would stand on a porch, and whoever was coming, He would stand in the doorway. That person would come up on the porch up to the doorway, and that's where he would be greeted. That was the absolute customs. That's what fathers do. Daddies, as soon as they see, they run. In fact, you can imagine the servants. They're standing there so formal, and the daddy's running, and wow, I didn't know the old man could even move. Look at him. And so now they're churning to keep up with the daddy. Now the son, he's coming home. Now he's got his Cliff Notes in his back pocket, and now he's going to start giving his speech because he's worked on it all the way home. And when I see my father, this is what I'm going to say. But do you get the picture? You see, the daddy never listened to the boy's speech. He was too busy. He was too busy hugging. He was too busy kissing. He was too busy telling the servants, get some shoes for my boy. Get my robe for my boy. Get my ring for my boy. And the boy sitting there saying, Father, I have... And he's hugging and he's kissing and he's not listening to one word. Because the only thing the daddy wanted was the son to start home. And the rest of it he'll run and hug and kiss, and he's not going to have time to listen to your speech. Then he does what all good daddies do. When something good happens, they throw a party. Now, I got in trouble one time. Rob won't let me say that God's a party animal. So I cannot tell you that because Rob will not allow that. But I'm telling you, God has joy in heaven when one comes home. And he did what all good daddies do. Man, he killed the best thing he had, and he fed, and he said, my son was dead, and he is alive. Now, I'm an elder brother. I have a younger brother, 4.5 years. And I was a pretty good kid. My younger brother was not a pretty good kid. And so, as I began to study this as a teenager, I wanted to preach a sermon on the elder brother. I've never created the sermon. I'll never preach it. Because that elder brother, I just shudder to think when that boy came home. Now remember, the elder brother represented what? Pharisees, the church. I just shudder to think what would happen if the elder brother met him first. I know this doesn't apply to Aiken because you're nice people. But I've been in churches that if the prodigal walked in, that other voice that said, nobody cares, nobody wants you, would have been the voice. You know what I'm talking about? What a story. I believe if the story of the good daddy was the only story in the 66 books, we have enough to see God's character, God's love, and it's enough for salvation. The story of salvation is that story. The story of the prodigal is my story. And I don't think Rob minds me saying this. The story of the prodigal is Rob's story. Why? I've been in the pig pen. Nobody cared. My earthly daddy had trouble. He came through in the end beautifully for me. But it was my heavenly daddy. He said, come home. It's the story of salvation. It's the story that people in Aiken, South Carolina want to hear. They want to hear that somebody cares, that somebody loves. Don't help them write their speech. You know, we're kind of good at speech writing. Well, now, if you do this and this and this, don't do that. He's not going to listen. He's too busy hugging and kissing. Too busy crying. Too busy partying. I said that the word daddy's mentioned a third time in the Bible. So we're going to go to, don't look it up, Mark the 16th chapter. Actually, Mark the 14th. And we find Jesus with His disciples. The disciples had never seen Jesus like this. He looked tired. He looked sad. He looked worn out. He looked troubled. And Jesus goes to the Garden of Gethsemane. And He takes His three closest friends. And He says, I'm hurting. Would you please stay here? I'm going to go a little further. And for you, will you pray? Oh, yes. And so we find Jesus as He goes forward. He's so overcome that He lays prostrate on the ground, clutching the ground, and He's praying. And He comes back, and the disciples are sound asleep. And He wakes them up another time and says, can't you stay and pray? And He goes again, and He falls. And this happens a third time, and Jesus is on the ground. Do you understand that what happened in Gethsemane was where the decision was made for our salvation, and that Christ would go to the cross? What happened in Gethsemane was so great to our Lord and Savior that if God had not sent angels from heaven to support, He would have died in that garden. And let me tell you, there was two voices in that garden working. You better believe it. One voice is saying, why are you doing this? And the other voice is praying to God for strength. And the other one comes back and says, man, what's wrong with you? You don't have any converts to speak of. And you've been at this for 3.5 years. Give it up. And the other voice is praying, God, thy will be done. And finally the last voice says the most cruelest thing a voice can say. Nobody cares. Look at your three favorite disciples sound asleep. What's wrong with you? And this finally, Jesus cries out in His most agonizing moment, and He cries out, Daddy! Daddy! The most intimate word a son can have with his daddy is that word. And He cries out, Daddy! Daddy! And then I think He looked in the future. And He saw you. And He saw you. And He saw you, young man. And He saw me. And He said, Daddy! Daddy, if there's any way, let this pass. Don't let anybody ever tell you that when you share with your daddy in heaven your problems, that that's a moment of weakness. He invites you Jesus, making the decision for eternity, says, "Daddy, I'm hurting. If there's any way that this can pass." But then He saw us, and He said the words that the daddy wanted to hear. "Nevertheless, Thy will be done." Rob and I are going to Israel in November, paying for it ourselves. I don't know what Rob wants to see. There's so many things. I want to see the Garden of Gethsemane. "Daddy, I want to be in that garden and tell Him 31 years ago, 'Thank you for coming and getting me out of a pig pen.' And in that garden, He made that decision for you individually." In the 1880s, early 1890s, there was an evangelist by the name of T.R. Rosenberry, pretty well known for his day. And he tells the story that in the middle of July, that he was on a train. And the train was going from New York all the way to Los Angeles. And he said that as we got into Kansas, he noticed that there was a young boy, 20, 21, 22, and the young boy would sit down and he would get up and he'd walk to the front of the railroad car, and then he'd come and he'd sit down, then he'd get up and he'd walk to the back of the railroad car, and it was just continually up and down, well, forward, backwards, all this. Finally, T.R. Rosenberry couldn't stand it any longer, so he went to the boy and he said, "Son, you know, I can tell something is bothering you. Would you share with me what it is?" And the boy said, "I grew up on a farm in Kansas. When I was about 18 or 19, I told my parents that I would like to go to New York City and I would like to learn a trade and do something with my life. My parents told me that they really needed me to stay and help them on the farm, but I had to go. And so I've been in New York City for 2 years. It hadn't worked out very good. So last month, I told my parents that sometime in July, that I was going to be on this train. Now you see, sir, in a few minutes, the train is going to go by the farmhouse where my parents live. And then the train's going to start to go up a hill. And when it does that, it's going to slow down. So I wrote my parents and I told them that sometime in July, I was going to be on this train. And I told them that if they wanted me home, would they please put out a white towel on the fence?" And he says, "I'm so scared." He says, "I want to go home. But if there's no white towel, I guess I'm just going to go on to Los Angeles. And I really don't know what's going to happen." He says, "I can't bear it." So he says, "Sir, we're going to be there in a few minutes. Will you go to the head of the car and will you look out and tell me if there's a white towel on the fence?" Now, T.R. Rosenberry is emotionally involved in this story totally. And so he goes to the front of the car. And sure enough, as the train starts to slow down, he looks out and he sees the only farmhouse there around. He knows it's the farmhouse. And his eyes are looking for the white towel. And there is no white There's no white towel because there's white sheets on the clothesline. There's white sheets on the fence line. There's white sheets on the roof of the house. There's white sheets on the grass. There's white sheets in the field. It looked like in the middle of July a snowstorm on one farmhouse in the middle of Kansas. And as the train started going up that hill, T.R. Rosenberry said he looked back and he saw a young man, a suitcase in one hand, his hat in another hand, running as fast as he could to go home. Have you seen the white sheets in your life? Have you seen how much God cares for you? Have you seen no matter what you've done, where you've been, you are so precious to Him? We have no other message. Dear Daddy, what a wonderful person you are. You loved us so much that finally you even sent your Son. You gave Him up so that we can see what sin will do in our lives. I can only thank you for saying to me, come home. These people here at this church today love you. They care for you. We're thankful that we've just had the opportunity to share a different view of your love through these names. But Father, I'm going to pause. There might be somebody here today that smiles when they come in, laughs, says everything's great, but dying inside. First of all, let them know that we care. Make us aware to show our love. But most of all, let them understand the story of the prodigal is their story. And all you want to do is run, hug, and kiss and welcome them back into your family. We love you for this. And again, thank you. Thank you, Daddy, for who you are. The precious name of Jesus. Amen. Thank you, folks.